in Nigeria, I was a female athlete. But I realized that when I do sports, I can actually do a whole lot of things and manage them properly. Whereas when I was not running, I felt I had all the time in the world and I just let things be.
That was Omena Babalola, and this is episode 184 of the Inspired Souls podcast. Hi, I'm Carolyn, and I'm a roadrunner.
And I'm Kim, and I'm a trail runner. Welcome to our podcast, where we bring the communities of trail and road running together and explore the parallels between running and life.
Omena Babalola is an accomplished 55-year-old master sprinter from Winnipeg, Manitoba, and an absolute force to be reckoned with. Born in Nigeria to two high-achieving parents, Omena came to Canada in her early 20s and spent time on PEI before completing her MBA at St. Mary's University in Halifax and then following her man to Winnipeg. Omena currently works as a professional auditor at Manitoba Hydro and is the vice president of Athletics Manitoba. As for her start in athletics, Omena describes what it was like to, quote, be so slow when her mom was so fast. Despite coming dead last in her first foot race, Omena stuck with sprinting and chose to focus most of her energy on the things that would give her the biggest return on investment. It turns out that this is a valuable life skill off the track as well. After taking some time off while having her twins in 1997, Omena was re-inspired in her late 30s by Saskatchewan-based sprinting legend Carol Lafayette Boyd, who's over 25 years her senior. Carol gave Omena some positive words of encouragement about her potential, and she decided to re-engage with competition, and as they say, the rest is history. Omena still holds numerous university and provincial sprinting records and has medaled on national and international stages in the 200 meters, as well as the 4x100 meter relay. In 2023, Omena was awarded Female Masters Athlete of the Year by Athletics Manitoba. So without further delay, please enjoy this conversation with Omena Babalola. Omena, thank you for joining us and welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Yes, well, I've gotten to know you a little bit through our committee work for Athletics Manitoba, and I'm really excited. I've been personally inspired by your example and feel fairly confident that others will as well. And so we're excited to dive into your story tonight. But before we go there, before we hear all about your athletic life and accomplishments, let's set the stage. You grew up in Nigeria, didn't you? And came to Canada in your early 20s. Tell us a bit more about that.
Okay, so I was born in Nigeria sometime in the 60s, which I don't say what year, somewhere there. And but then my dad was a vet when he's retired now. And he traveled around and about the world for different reasons. So my first stint in Canada was when he was in school in Guelph, and I was two. So I was in Guelph for about a year when I was younger. And so my first accent was Canadian.
Oh, really?
Really?
Interesting.
I kind of lost it when I got back to Nigeria.
So you were in Guelph and then moved back to Nigeria before moving to PEI. Okay.
Guelph, then moved back to Nigeria. And then over the years, my dad, because he was a professor, so he went on sabbaticals. And so we kind of went to visit him wherever he was in the world at the time for whichever sabbatical. So we've done England, Malaysia, California, like just things like that. So we kind of traveled a bit, which is why my accent is not really placeable. Like Nigerians don't really know I'm from Nigeria. And so people from Nigeria didn't know where I was from. Like, so nobody really knows where I'm from. Let's put it that way. So I've gone through life with Nigerians not thinking I'm Nigerian, and other people not knowing that I'm not Canadian, but I'm not sure where I'm at. So
what would you consider your first language?
English.
Oh, interesting. Okay. And do you,
it's
how
the
many
only
other
language
languages?
That I speak very, very fluently. So in Nigeria, English is the official language of Nigeria is English. So you go to school, it's English. So if you went through schooling, then you learned English and that was what you had. And then you learned, and for most of the schools that you go to, the more prestigious the school is, the less you can speak your mother tongue in class or in school. So English is my language.
All right. Okay, good to know. And then somewhere in the late 80s is when you moved like officially to Canada, like to PEI?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So tell us where you've lived all in Canada, because you're in Winnipeg now.
Yeah. So came into Canada to Charlottetown with my dad. So he got a job at the vet college when they were trying to open up and they needed all the top people to head up all the departments and fill up things as they were building to get accredited. So I came with my dad in 89, fall of 89. Then went to UPEI for 1 year, just as part of my orientation acclimatization experience. I already had a first degree from Nigeria by the time I was coming in here. So this was just trying to prove to people that my Nigerian certification meant something. So I decided to take two courses, English to prove that I can speak it. Well, not like a course to prove I could speak English. So I took organizational behavior, which involves a whole lot of writing and stuff, mm-hmm. and quantitative methods to prove that I was smart, because most people fail that in school. So if you passed it, then the difference in cultures is at the time in Nigeria, you hardly got people who had like A's. The profs didn't give A's that easily. So when you come with a Nigerian transcript, it makes it look like, because it's not like here where you get A's like a dime a dozen. So I needed to kind of like show that my certificate might show the grades on them might not be as high as what you would expect here. But then if I did something here and I got all A's, then mm-hmm. you judge for yourself kind of thing. So that was my way of trying to translate my degree at the time.
Yeah, it was that almost like the energy that you were pursuing this with, like, I'm proving that like I'm smart. And I, you know, I just heard you say something in that description of like, I needed to prove myself, you know, and I'm just wondering if that rings true for you.
Yes, because we were the only Nigerian family on Prince Edward Island in 1989. So, you're going somewhere and people keep asking you questions, wondering if you understand English, wondering if you can write, wondering if you can, you know.
Right.
And the best way to deal with all those questions is to have some paper that tells them so you don't have to. So then I moved to Nova Scotia, Halifax. So I went to St. Mary's University for my MBA 1 year later. PEI was pretty small. My dad had already been there before and taught there before he got his full-time job. He spent his sabbatical in UPEI before we moved over. So I kind of knew what to expect. I knew that place was kind of like small, and if I needed to stay here, because I was going to stay here for life, so to speak, I needed to figure out how I was going to survive in a brand new country and whatever things I needed to do to survive was all. So PEI was there. I'm not sure if they're still standing, but I had provincial records in track because I did track there while I was in school. Just different things. My whole idea is if you're going to go to a new place, you need to figure out ways of getting to understand the culture. And unlike most people who come here for school and think they're going to be going back, but then stay, I came here knowing I wasn't going back. So it was more like, if you're going to be here, how do you get to know people? How do you get to... And if you just sit down in your house with your father, who is way older than you and is not really going to go anywhere. So then you have to do something. So how do you get out? You go out, you get a job. So then that way, you know how the work goes. You go to school, you know how students behave. You go, you know what I mean? So that was my own way of, at the time, getting to understand the culture, watching a whole lot of soap operas and commercials just so that I could know what people do with things.
Yeah, it's very educational
if you think about it that way.
Right.
So that was my Charlottetown stint. So I did. I arrived in October of 89. I did the UPEI stuff in, I think it was the winter session that I did. I just did the two courses, and then I applied to St. Mary's University and got. I started in the next school year. So the fall of 1990 was when I went for my MBA in St. Mary's, and the key was not so much the school, it was the certificate. It was just a way to be out of PEI so that I could be in a bigger province where there are bigger options for jobs and all that stuff, and also get to know more people. And Halifax is kind of more diverse people. So I wasn't the only Nigerian there, and there's so many people in school. So that was where I got the international exposure to more other students that were from all over the world, and also more into the student life, because I was now in residence, which is the best place to learn about anything.
Is it ever?
Yes. It is true, because my husband arrived in Canada 2 years after me, and he never stayed in residence. And you can see my kids are the ones that sell the difference. Like, you guys were only 2 years apart. How come you know all this stuff? I said, well, first, I traveled a lot as a kid, so I was exposed to different cultures. And then secondly, I stayed in res for 2 years.
So your husband's from Nigeria too, or?
Yeah, my husband's from Nigeria.
Okay.
So, he went to Dalhousie University.
Right. Now, what brought you're in Winnipeg now. So how did you get from Halifax to Winnipeg? Yeah.
I followed my man.
Okay. I know a little bit about that. Yeah.
Yes, so
good. And you're still in Winnipeg. And I know a little bit about that too, how that city can grow on you.
Yeah, it was supposed to be for 2 years. And then, it will be 30 years in 3 months.
Yeah.
How did that happen?
So you talk about initially coming to Canada and figuring out how to survive, right? Like, prove yourself and survive and learn how to adapt to this culture. And knowing a bit about what we're going to hear more about on this episode, you did more than just survive. You completely thrived. So why don't you tell us now a bit about how your athletic journey began and who inspired you along the way?
Okay, so my athletics journey began with a bean bag race where I came last. I must have been somewhere between 4 and 6. So that was inter-house sports. They had regular running, and then for the younger kids, they had bean bag races. And so you had to put this bean bag on your head and run without it falling.
Oh, okay.
And so I don't like being distracted with, there's too many things to deal with, like move, keep something on your head, whatever. Anyway, I'm not the most coordinated human being out there. So I was more concerned with the thing not falling off my head than the race. So I did come last. And my mom runs. She was a runner in her youth. And at all the inter-house sports races, they always have a mother's race, which my mom always won when she was there. So it was almost like, how could you have a mother that runs so fast and be so slow?
Did someone actually say that to you, or is that just the way you internalized it?
No, people said it. There was no politically correctness in the 70s. Like, what was that? Yeah, that was that. So I figured, okay, well, let's see if I can do running without having to think about. So I don't do hurdles. I don't do javelin. Yeah. I don't do anything where you have to hold any other thing and concentrate on 20 things at the same time. I just run.
Okay.
And for most of, until I got to university, I didn't run with shoes. I run barefooted. So there's nothing, it's just you. Now that I think about it, I did my tryouts for my university track team with no shoes and a pink dress.
Oh my gosh.
I love that. Oh my goodness. Do I ever love that?
Yeah.
University track. Oh.
I had a lecture that we're doing tryouts. And somebody I don't know how they knew that I was fast or I could run. I'm not sure how the thing went in. So they were going to do trials that evening. I had classes. So I came from class. So I had my books and my pink dress and I had one of the fastest times. So that's how I ended up being on the team.
Okay. But there's got to be a lot of story between running that first race with the beanbag on your head and coming dead last to showing up in the pink dress and winning everything barefoot.
Yeah.
So your mom was fast.
Mm-hmm.
You were slow. I've talked to you before and you said, I love the process of improvement. So like what made you come back that next time and go, oh, I'm better. And then again, and again, and again, until you sort of felt like mastery.
So I figured, okay. I know I was slow because I was concentrating on having something on my head. So let's try to do this without anything.
Yeah.
So I got better at Bimberg Fest. So how can I do this without, and since you can, it's not like once it falls, you're off, right? So how can it keep falling and you putting it back on your head and you still keep moving forward, right?
Mm-hmm.
So eventually I conquered that one. So that was step number one. Then it was like, well, if you don't have anything on you, you could actually be fast, right? So I decided to try doing that. And so when we do, and in Nigeria, it's not like you have a choice for most of these things. You have phys ed, you have trials, everybody goes for it. And then it's, then it, they pick the creme de la creme and everybody else does it for fun or recreation or whatever the thing is. So in the process of having been there because you don't have a choice, you now realize, oh, wow, if I'm not holding stuff, I'm a little bit faster. And then it's like, well, if I do a little bit more, I can be faster than this person. I know. And so eventually I got to the point where I was representing my elementary school at competitions around the city. So I was one of the, I ended up graduating as a top athlete. I did long jump. And then I realized that sand in my underwear was not a good thing. Then I did hurdles, which was kind of interesting because I did well in hurdles because I was fast, not because I could hurdle. Right. Because I high jumped over the hurdles. I just got in between them faster than most people.
You did well so despite then I realized, the hurdle.
Yeah.
But that wasn't for me. So I dropped that. I was known for high jump in high school. I actually represented my high school in high jump competitions. But then I did not grow. So when I started school, we lined up according to our heights for each class for assembly. I started school at number 5 and graduated at 21.
Everyone else grew early,
mature. Yeah. I was similar. Yeah. I was the tallest in grade 6, and that was it.
And I was the exact opposite. I was like the shortest forever, and now I'm like 5'6". So,
Interesting.
And high jump was fine because I didn't have a technique. I just happened to be able to leap off the ground. So the higher you go, the more technique you need. Between my height and no actual real technique, I kind of graduated out of the field event. So I ended up in sprints.
With sprints. Now, you mentioned you didn't like any stuff, like javelin, nothing in your hands. Did you ever try relay, or was the baton, again, too much for you?
Funny enough, when it comes to relay, then the kumbaya me, the let's get everybody into this, comes into play. So if my relay time is so much faster than my sprint time, is not even funny.
Really?
Like,
you're faster in the relay than in the solo.
Yeah, because I have the worst reaction time in the history of human beings.
Okay, so in the relay, you can already be up to speed.
With the relay, I'm not taking the first like I do any other leg, but, and then it's also a team thing. So there's a pride and team thing, and you're not disappointing people. So that whole kumbaya thing comes into play. So the social omena takes over.
The social omena. Oh my gosh, I love you so much.
I love how you are so self-aware. Like, you know your strengths, you know your weaknesses or your less strengths. And you knew that at quite a young age. Like, at least, I don't know. Did you know that? Could you see that perspective when you were younger, or is it only now looking back?
No, actually, I just came. So I have high achieving parents. So you know how a whole lot of people grow up wanting to be better than their parents, and it's not that much of a stretch. My parents lived in a one bedroom, so I'm going to try and live in a two. My parents were already high there. Like, it would take, it was like being like them was more like, even that was almost like a dream. You know what I mean? So like I told you, I grew up with gallivanting countries because my dad was a visiting professor going all over the place.
Yeah.
My mom had her master's. I think my mom was doing her master's when I was in high school. My dad has a PhD, right? So it was like you kind of want to be like them, not so much like I didn't think that I could surpass them. So it was more like being like them or being as close to them as I could be, because I grew up, as my husband says, I'm not sure I grew up Nigerian, but yeah. So I had those. I mean, we're not mega rich, but we're not poor. We're above middle class. So somewhere in that whole
upper middle class. Okay.
Yeah.
But that was my exposure, right? So you now try to see the things that you know that you can do well. And I've always been self-conscious to a fault. And I figured if you show more of the things that you can do well, nobody notices what you can't do well.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
So that's kind of what I kind of told my daughter, because she's like, oh yeah, you're so proud. I was like, no, there's things I can't do. I just don't do them enough for people to notice.
Yes.
That's okay, a great way to approach a confidence issue.
Yeah. So I'm like, yeah. I cannot dance for the life of me. You do not see me dancing. I can't sing, so I don't sing. I can run, so I run like the wind. You know, it's, yeah. And when people see you and they think of you and running, nobody thinks, oh, would you sing a song for me while you're at it? Nope. It's like,
no.
Yeah.
I just stay in my lane and then make my lane so.
Pun intended. Stay in your lane.
Enough, yeah. That nobody sees anything. And it's kind of interesting because I look at my athletics life and for whatever reason, I've been able to translate it into the rest of my life. So if I'm studying for an exam and there's a topic that I have no clue about and I assess it and it looks like I could read from today till the cows come home and I won't know it, I don't even bother studying for it. I just leave that topic alone and say, whatever 20 marks it's going to get, we shall abandon it and spend the time on the ones I know, get my 100% in those ones and, you know, fail a question and still pass. So that's my, you know, like I kind of applied it to life too. That,
but I can see why you're drawing these parallels between your athletics and life, because you said, okay, no long jump, no high jump, no hurdles anymore. Like I'm 100 or 60 meters to basically 400 meters in the relay, right?
Even 60 meters, I was not really a 60 meter runner because 60 meters exposes my.
Oh, slow start.
Yeah. So if you took my 60 meters time and you translated it, even 100 meters, I'm not good at. I wasn't good at 100 because we don't have 60 in Nigeria. So I did 1-2, and I only did 400 meters under duress, like
under
a team, a relay. We needed somebody, that kind of stuff, right? But I didn't. That was not me. I don't have that kind of endurance. So 200 was my sweet spot, and 100 was my speed endurance to run it too.
As you're talking, I'm picturing a unicorn, right? And everybody focuses on its horn. It doesn't notice that it can't swim, right? It focuses on the horn of the unicorn. And you chose to focus on your strengths. So often we coach and we read and we hear about self-improvement that a person should work on their weaknesses. So I'm wondering, like I see with you, you very selectively chose to focus on your strengths. So I guess my next question, and it might be diverging a little bit, is within this curated lane that you made for yourself of your strengths, were there any perceived weaknesses that you chose to work on? Or did you really just 100% work on getting stronger at what you were stronger at?
Okay, so the way I looked at it is, it's like everything else. I figure, do I need it? Is it important, right? So for instance, I do not drink. I do not like beer. And I tried it when I was like 5, 6, 7 or whatever age it is, because there's no age limit for drinking in Nigeria. And I did not like it. And then I left it there. And then I tried it again at 31. And I still did not like it. And then people said, oh, you have to acquire taste for it. I'm like, is it good for me? Nope. So why should I acquire taste for something that is not good for me? So it stayed there.
Right.
And then I tried it again at 50 just for the fun of it, and it's still crappy. So we're done with that. So it's the same thing that I look at for anything that I need to do. So is it necessary that you come out of the blocks nicely? And the answer is yes. I'm not good at it, but the answer is yes. So I will practice my stats. I would run the 60 meters to help me when I came to Canada and realized 60 meters existed. I run a 60 meters to help me with getting that reaction time while getting all that stuff so that I can be better at the 102. So I will still practice it. It's just that I already know that it's not my forte. So am I going to kill myself over whatever it is? And then that's where self competing about with myself comes into. So when I'm running a 60 meter, I'm not running my 60 meters to be better than all these other people. I'm running my 60 meters to see if it's better than the last one I did or the last two that I did or the, So then it now becomes a self thing. And the reason is I've asked myself, is a stat necessary for you to be a sprinter? And the answer is a big resounding yes. So we shall focus on what we need to do that.
That's so pure. It's so simple. Is this necessary for me to achieve my goal? If so, is it necessary? Let's work on it.
And also too, is there other things? So if I walk every day on practice on 60 meters and it's only going to give me 0.02 seconds of improvement. Why don't I go and spend a whole lot of time doing endurance training that is actually going to result in me taking 0.5 seconds off? So I never really practiced too much of that. I ended up with a bronze medal from Canadian Nationals when I was younger in 200 because I considered it on what would yield the most bang for my buck, so to speak. So it's the same thing I did with the studying. It's not like I don't try. So I'll look at it and try. If an hour or two or whatever has gone by and it's not working, there's no point. And I have tutored people for exams. I had a 100% pass rate in the people who I tutored for the CME at the time, so the professional accounting group, and the people fail this thing for some strange and interesting reason. And I told them that the person who tutored me for one area of that exam when I first took it did not pass the exam. So what I realized is people get focused on getting the right answer, and because you spend so much time on it, on that question. And I'm like, hold on 1 minute. If I don't know how to calculate the interest rate, right? So there's a question that says, calculate the interest rate or whatever it is. I've told myself, if I cannot calculate the interest rate, I will move on to the next question and says, assume the interest rate is 10%. And I'll do the rest of the thing, what I know. So they're going to give you marks for all these other things. So you don't get stuck on things. If you're in an exam and it's multiple choice and you figure out there's 100 questions, you have an hour, divide the time, save 10 minutes, go through all your questions. And at the end of anything that if it's 2 minutes per question, if you've spent more than 2 minutes and it's not coming, move on to the next one and go to the end of the exam, then come back and then start going through the. So what I learned very quickly was you can't let your handicap stop you, whatever that handicap is. I have arthritis in my knee and I'm like, okay, fine. I can't run. So we shall not run. So for the last 2 years, I have only run on the day of competition. So people ask me, so how big, where do you train? In my basement? I'm like, so you run in your basement? Nope. I will do squats. I will do weights. I will do everything. I would not run. And then on race day, Montreal, I put on my spikes for the first time when I was there. And it's like, okay, let's see whether these legs are going to hold. Set, go. And we're good. So if you're going to give me stress, if you're going to be painful and it's not going to yield any results, we'll save the pain for race day. There's going to be practitioners and people there. So I didn't know all of this when I was little, but you know, little things show you stuff that you can't sweat the small. Like you can't let little setbacks in something stop you from doing other things. So if my legs are hot, I will pull out my Beachbody thing. And what exercises can you do if you have no legs? We'll do all those ones. Okay, I can't, my shoulder, I can't lift, do overhead, whatever. What else can I do? You know?
Yeah.
So it's more, and I just have applied that same thing. And that, probably why I like sports is because it teaches you very early a whole lot of things that you don't think about. I was a student athlete in Nigeria. I was a female athlete in Nigeria at that time, which is like, everybody asks you, when are you going to stop this? And what, you know, your husband is not going to like muscles, your husband, or whatever. So there was that. But I realized that when I do sports, I can actually do a whole lot of things and manage them properly. Whereas when I was not running, I felt I had all the time in the world and I just let things be. Mm-hmm. But when you're an athlete, you have to, you know, you figure out what all your assignments are. You're studying on the bus. Mm-hmm. You're studying in between sessions at the university. You're taking tests on the bus sometimes. You're doing, so you learn how to be organized. And my dad was like, yeah, sure, lady, you can do whatever you want. But if your grades fall below a particular thing, it means sports is affecting it and you're going to have to stop and concentrate. So it was kind of funny because I made a deal with him in my final year that I will not go out, do any outside competition traveling so that I could focus on my books. And that was my worst year in school. I mean, I didn't fail, but it was my worst because all of a sudden I thought I had all this time on my hands, which I really, truly didn't.
Right.
So you delay everything to whenever. And then all of a sudden, boom, it's due next week. Whereas if I knew I was going to, you know, Port Harcourt, I was going to be traveling, I was going to do whatever, I would have read all that stuff in advance. And so I realized I needed.
You needed constraints almost, like the thing that could happen at
right?
The thing that can happen at any time often happens at no time, right? Yeah. So when you have more on your plate, that's what they say. Is that what you just said,
Kim?
Give the busy person. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But it taught you time management.
It taught me trying to look into the future. It also taught me things like, you know, if you don't succeed, try. There's always another way, you know.
Yeah. You know who else worked on the 60 to get better at the 100 and 200? That's Noel Lyles. Noel Lyles is working on the 60 to get better at his 100.
Because he's a 200 meter.
Noel Lyles is the fastest man alive at this point.
Guy on the planet right now.
Yeah, I just outed myself there. Thank you for clarifying.
No. He's kind of like the next Usain Bolt or whatever. I don't think he's broken Usain Bolt's records yet, but probably this summer in Paris or some Diamond League or something like that. So he's a really fast sprinter.
So just closing the loop on this though, the question that was burning in my mind as you were talking about how you chose to choose what was necessary and prioritize was, where did this come from? Like, where did you learn this skill? And then you answered it. You were like, it was sport. It was running. It was
your dad.
It was discipline that really taught you and ingrained in you those life skills that so many people either don't learn until their 50s or never learn at all. Like you really had a solid perspective on life from a very young age, it sounds like.
Now, you had your kids, right? You have twins who are now 26 years old, but you took a few years off of running after the kids were born and then you started to kind of get back into it when they were in elementary school, when you were helping out coaching their team. So tell us a bit more about that. And then when this competitive fire got sparked again in you, when presumably you would have been 35 or older.
Yes. So I took a break from competing, but I didn't take a break from being physically active. I would say training.
Okay.
So I was still running up to when I was pregnant. So I still ran until my late 20s. Like when I moved to Winnipeg, I had a team and I still walked out with them and all that. Then I had the kids and truly took 1 year off. So the only time I actually truly took off exercising and all that stuff was the 1 year from when I was pregnant to when they were born and some months later, mostly because I knew I was having twins earlier and I was high risk. So I was not even allowed to step on a stool and reach. It was like nothing like that. So I went from walking out the day that I thought before I knew I was pregnant to thou shalt not, which was painful.
Wow.
And very, because I couldn't do anything because of it was high risk. So
this was in the late 90s.
That would have been, they were born in 97. So 97, so from spring of 97 to the end of 97, they were born in November. Okay. I did nothing because I was not allowed to do anything. That was stressful. Anyway, then after they were born, because of also high risk trauma, whatever it is, it took my body like another almost a year to recover from that trauma. Currently, you've met me. So I was tiny. So I was like one of those 90-pound people until like 21, 22. And then I went up to like 180 when I had the kids because it was all baby. So I had like almost 70 pounds of baby and everything. Yeah, so it was a big... So my body was not happy. So it took 1 year to... It took 1 year to be like, okay, now that you're done punishing me, you can have your body back with comments. So
but you did get your body back. So tell us about the Carol Lafayette Boyd story. Like what happened?
And tell us who she is for those who may not know.
Yes.
Oh, okay. So Carol Lafayette Boyd happens to be the same age as my father. So I met her in 2006, 2007, somewhere around there. So we had this Boeing track meet at the time, and she came bringing the Saskatoon team. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, oh, wow, this lady is running. I think I did one event because I came with the kids' school and I was the one helping helping out. I was the volunteer parent. And so I think I did one event because I hadn't really trained and I just thought I'll do something. So we ran together and she was like, oh, you're really fast. You should do masters and all that. Come out, there's a Canadian masters, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, okay, I'll think about it. So I decided that I will just do the local scene first before I go national. I just kept doing more training while I was training the kids, working out at the same time. I did a little bit of coaching for Winnipeg Optimists. If I was going to be at the track, I might as well make myself useful. So I did a few of those things and just started competing locally. Then the World Masters Indoors came to Canada in 2010. It was in Kamloops, BC. So I'm like, oh, wow, World Championship. It's in Canada. I don't have to really travel much. I don't have to do whatever it is. And you know, so I knew Carol was going to be there. So I'm like, okay, let's go national. Let's go international before we even go national, right? So
let's pause on Carol for a second. So you were initially inspired by your mom. Now here comes this woman. And like, if I'm doing the math right, if this was around 2005, you're in your late 30s and she must be in her 60s?
Yes, something like that.
And so does she remind you of your mom? Is this almost like a second inspiration? Like she, and for people who don't know, like she's a multiple world record holder. Like she is fast and she's still competing to this day. She's in her 80s. She's like a 200 meter sprinter. Like she could kick my butt at a 200 meter now. Like,
let's put it this way. The time that I ran my 200 meters last season, I mean, granted, I was injured. Her 200 was faster than mine.
Yeah. As an 80 something year old.
As
right?
an 80 something year old. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. Like she's
and
still
you're not
competing.
Slow,
and you are so fast, Omena. This is what I'm talking about. So what was it about her? Like, did you kind of know at that time in 2005 that she was like, quite a big deal, and did that sort of light a fire under you again by her saying, hey, you're fast, you should compete, we have this master's thing? And
so it was one is that, okay, so she's my parents' age, right? So yeah. She's actually older than my mom, so that kind of got me to like, this lady is fast.
Yeah,
she's much older and she's setting all these records and everything. So there is a place for, because remember there were no masters female, right. I mean, we still can barely find masters female athletes. So it kind of validated the fact that, yeah, you can keep doing stuff, right? And then because she's much older, it gave me somebody else to be able to say, when people ask me that question, why are you still running? How come you're still running? I'm like, well, there's Carol. And then later I found out there was Olga. And Olga was even older than Carol. So between those two people, when people say, when are you going to stop running? And my answer was like, my track heroes, female. You know, Carol was in her 60s then, and Olga was in her 80s.
Yeah.
And so I'm like.
And for those who don't know, that's Olga Kotelko, correct?
Kotelko, yeah. She ran until her 90s, and she actually was at a world championship like 2 months before she died. So
so
I'm like, if those people can still go, then I was 30 something. Yeah. Then I might as well keep going.
Why You're like, not? I'm young.
So do you wish, I have to ask, at some point, do you envision yourself being that person? Already,
have
I'm
you
sure.
already been there, that person to someone.
Already, I'm sure there's younger athletes, your daughter included, that look to you and go, like, why not? Like, I just because I'm 25 doesn't mean I need to stop. Just because I'm 35 doesn't mean I need to stop. Mm-hmm. Do you feel the weight of that at all? Do you see people looking up to you and acknowledge that you are their hero?
I do see that. And one of the things that I've learned to do. So my other thing about my mom, other than being an athlete, is that she was also like a counselor. She didn't go to school to be a counselor, but for some strange reason, everybody decided that their problems had to land in my house and it was resolved. So,
wow.
Wow.
So I grew up with watching her encourage people or being a role model to people or helping out people or doing whatever. So I am my mother's daughter to that extent. And so when I go out on to track, I try to, especially within the African community. So there's a whole lot of people who still believe that you, when you're in school, you're in school. And if you do track, it's a distraction. So I've kind of like used my platform to try and educate people a little bit, talk to the parents, try and encourage them to let their daughters come out and run. They're not going to get 20 muscles the size of yams. Guys are still going to like them, whatever. Like, so I spend a whole like a lot of time.
They're better grades if they run.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I try to do that on that side. Then I also try to encourage people at the line. So most of the time I'm on the line at the start with 14-year-old girls.
Yeah.
So that was when I, in my prime of sprinting without being injured, that was where my time put me. And so I try to use that opportunity to like encourage them to do that. Sometimes people are scared and I'm like, okay, no, do this. This is a proper warm up. Here's how you use the blocks. Like anything that I can give to help them, you know, compete, you're not competing, you know, most of the time yes, you want to win, but half the time you're competing against yourself. And so that was kind of the big message I had for most of the kids. Even the parents, when I sit on the stands, is it was like, oh, she came last. I'm like, no. What did she run the last time? And they're like, oh, no, I don't really know. I'm like, okay, here's the result. I will go through the thing, show them where the listing is. The person ran, you know, 10.07 last time and now is 9.97. That is an improvement. That prevents the kid from crying. You know, all that stuff. So it's more or less just trying to get that education and to let people know it's most of the time it's, you're running more against yourself than anything. Yeah. Like I tell people at provincials 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, I could technically have taken a slow walk for 20 minutes from the starting line to the end and still won the gold medal. I had no competition. I was the only one.
Yeah.
But I'm competing against myself.
Right.
So it's more of how did I do before? I have my standards for where I was when I was healthy. I have my new standards for where I am battling arthritis in my knees. So, you know, how is it? How did it feel? What can I do better? How did I? So it's more of that. So if you concentrate on those things, I ran into a lady at the track. And when she was running, she was about 2-3 years ago, I told her that she was going to be, because I looked at her and like, you have it in you. You're going to go, you know, you're going to do once you're going to run under 8 seconds. And she was like, yeah, I can barely make the team. That day she ran under and I said, remember that? No, I said, congratulations or whatever. And she said, oh, remember when you told me that? I guess the time is now, right? So I those are the kind of things that I think that it track people focus on the competition. I'm slow or whatever it is. And I'm like, it's the fact that it takes you out. It gets you off your tush in the first place. You're always moving. And if there's anything I've learned from being injured is movement is your friend. You tend to think, oh, this hurts. I'm not going to do anything with it. You don't use it. You lose it. So funny. It's not even funny how much you lose when you do nothing. So, move what you can, you move what can move as fast as what can move on any given day.
Yeah.
And it changes.
You find what you can
you
do.
Great.
Yeah. That's the physio motion is lotion mantra.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So yes, I made the mistake of staying put when my knees were hot and I lost all the muscle tone around it and it just was bad. So now I'm trying to build that back up. And anytime I don't work out, it's painful getting out of bed in the morning.
Right.
So
it's
more of those things and just trying to, especially as women, right? With kids and all the other things in your life that can happen. You're trying to block time out to do stuff. And I'm like, just forget about blocking. Just if you go to the washroom, spend an extra 1 minute jogging on the spot and doing push-ups.
Catchphrase is, well, you brush your teeth, baby. That's my secret.
Yep.
And it's so much easier to like stay moving than it is to get moving, right? It's that inertia, like that extra energy that it takes you to just start, right? If you just are always doing something and always focusing on what you can do, like you said, do you ever wish you mentioned I could have taken 20 minutes to do the 200 and still got the gold medal. Like, do you ever wish you had more competition at these races?
So I do have competition in the races. So it depends on my mood, right? So for instance, because I'm the lone athlete, I get to choose where I want to run. And then sometimes because I know enough about the sport, I put in my seat time based on where my mind is on the day I was registering. So for instance, if it's a slow day and I don't have the energy and I don't want to even bother, I could register myself with and say I run 50 meters in 12 seconds as an example. So I'll put with the 11-year-olds or 10-year-olds or nobody or people who didn't put in their time.
Right.
And then I get to run that way. If I'm feeling the love I decide I want to be with 14-year-olds, I'll put in a time that I know will put me in. Like, I understand the system well enough to know how to register. So that is kind of the thing.
And you're gaming the system.
For the 200 meters that you watched me run, I could have gone with the open women, which is what I normally do. But that day, I was like, my leg is not... I don't know what is going on. So when they tried to put me with them, I'm like, no, I will run by myself.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So it just depends on the day.
It depends on the day. It will be more where I wish more people are in is more for people to join us and to be aware of the running. But I find that when I run with masters athletes, the difference in training is so, for the sprints anyway, is so much. So like last provincials, there was almost like a 100-meter difference. No, about 60 meters difference between me and the second person when I ran 200. And that, and I find that that might be intimidating for the people who are running.
Right. Yeah.
In this case, the lady was a distance runner. So that was fine because she wasn't expecting to be close. But if the person was an actual 200 meter runner, then they'll feel like, why am I? But like, same kind of situation that my daughter was in where I do want to race with her. So I think that it might be intimidating to other people if we're not at the same level. So I keep my master's competition for when I go for Canadian Masters and all those places, then all people there are kind of in the same, like all in the same thing. Mm-hmm. But then locally, I will tend not to want to run with so that people don't get discouraged. And
Yeah.
I love how you think. I'm sitting here just shaking my head. Like, you think so differently than so many people. You choose ways to selectively get the best out of yourself, but at the same time, not minimize others. And I think that is just so gracious and so brilliant and not necessarily common. Like, it's special. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, and you're aware of what can keep some people out of the sport. Like, if we're talking about growing the sport for especially masters women, of which you and I are on this committee that are trying to look at this problem, right? And I think you're speaking to one of the barriers that people say, like, I'm not fast, like, it's intimidating, right? And I think I do understand that, like, intimately, because I've shown up at some of these and I feel like I'm not fast or anything. And
remember our medal setting relay team, our provincial records outdoor team, when everybody was like, okay.
Omena and I ran on a relay team. They were like, we need you for a relay. And I'm like, do you know how slow I am? Like, I am not a sprinter. It was a 4x100-meter relay. And anyway, so I was, but they, you know, we needed a team. So I said, sure. And I was the first person too. I was the lead person or whatever. I didn't go off blocks or anything, but and I was so slow and I got my butt kicked. Like, all my worst fears came true and we still had so much fun. Like, I couldn't believe how much fun it was when every single, like, worst thing, like, oh, I'm too slow, whatever, because we were against university girls and they just, like, blew by me. Like,
that would be so intimidating. Still.
But it was so much
fun.
And I think if people could actually show up and have their worst fear come true like it did for me and realize the sun comes up tomorrow and we still had a great time and like I would do it again. Like I think we've gotten over such a massive, massive hurdle. And I think way more people and relays are the way to introduce people, I think, to track because like you said, it's that
it's not all on you, right?
It's not all on me. The eyes aren't all on me and everything. So I think that's one way certainly, but it is.
You forgot the best part of it. Remember, where did we get our fourth person from?
Oh, the stands, I think. Wasn't she sitting in the stands? It was like a mom that was there watching her teenage son.
We had somebody drop out last minute and we were only three and we really wanted to do this. And so we just got the announcer to announce over the PA that we needed one more person for the relay team. Qualifications, be over 35, be female. That's all you needed. We'll give you 10 minutes of practice, 15 minutes before the race, and we're good to go.
Yeah, and we did it, and it was, and I even think she had so much fun too.
She had so much fun.
Well, isn't that the best part of being in your midlife? Is that your gaffe factor is zero? Like you really don't care what people think at a certain point, and it's just about the fun. That's such a great story.
And she got into the record books because we set a provincial record because it had never been done before. So there she is, you know, showing up for the track without training since high school. And she's on the provincial record setting team.
That's awesome. That was so much fun. On that note, like what else do you think that we can do to invite women over to the track and tell them how much fun we're having? You know, like what are some other ideas that you have for, because obviously you've grown up with this, you know how much fun track can be, you know how rewarding it can be, you know that when you show up and work hard, it pays dividends, that you get results, it's fun. But for somebody that may not have kind of felt that experientially yet, what would you say to them?
I will say, come out and give it a try.
Yeah.
I try to get the people that are, funny enough, I've managed to get guys in to masters.
It's easier to get the guys in.
Yeah.
Weird, eh?
But one of the things I had mentioned to them is you don't run, and that's kind of where the Grand Prix nature of track in Manitoba comes into play, is you run with people who have around the same times as you. So if you're not worried that the person that is staying beside you on the line is like half your height, which is what tends to happen when you run with 11 or 12 year olds, then you do run and you are able to keep, you know what I mean? So it's find your space and then compete with people that have like times.
Right.
And I think the other thing too is that people are afraid to break something because, as my husband says, you can run as much as you want so long as you don't break anything that is not already broken. So
it's a good rule, I guess.
So I try not to break new things. So it's more like people, but that's where the training comes in, like the workshop you did, Caroline, when you do some of those things where people can do things among. So if we're able to get or grow it to the point where you have like 5, 6, 7 people at least, and they're all going to be at that same level of, I'm not really sure I know what I'm doing yet.
Yeah.
And so then if they're running, they put them, because if you have enough people, we can put them in the same team. And then I can always not run with masters people because I figure that doesn't help unless they want me to.
Right.
So then they can do their own thing, do their own computer, and then you get better as you go along.
For sure.
Carol that we're talking about did not start track until she was 50 something, I think. I think she was,
Are
it was
you
later.
Kidding?
Yeah.
Really?
It was later. Olga didn't start track until she was much older.
Oh, so I still have time.
Yeah.
Yay.
So actually it works better for them because they haven't broken anything. We are already broken by the time we get to 50. So
I'll give myself a bubble wrap for a few more years. And then
And I don't think Carla Del Gran, so she's another Canadian that holds loads of records and Canadian records, world records. And I believe she didn't start sprinting until her 40s either. Like she did it in high school. And then
Yeah.
A lot of
so she was
like
doing
that.
The road running thing, thinking that was the only kind of option for her. And then and she loved the speed work, and everyone was like groaning about the speed work. And she was like, I love this. And so someone's like, did you know you could sprint? And so she took it up in her, I think it was her mid 40s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the reason why people like marathons and all that road running and everything is you get lost in the masses and there's no focus on you.
Mm-hmm. So do you think that we have to get to some kind of critical mass, though?
Yes.
With bodies on the track, yes, where people can enough. Feel like they're not so like in a fishbowl, mm-hmm. right? Yeah.
And if we get enough bodies, then we can have the bodies in. There's the I don't even know how to run kind of thing. Well, I'll give you a good example. So I got to Nationals.
In Montreal?
4 weeks ago. Yeah, yep. Montreal, that one. And so we're about to run either the 50 or the 60. I don't remember which one it is. So my fellow lady that was on the, I think it was 50, was beside me. She's one age class younger. And she had her blocks and everything set up. And then I just stood there and I went to the track and I pulled my blocks off and didn't use the blocks. And she's like, oh, I didn't think about that, because she was a little injured, but she was still going to use the blocks. And then she didn't want to be the only one. Not, I'm like, I haven't used blocks for 4 years since I got back. Whatever the thing is, that's like, I don't even know how to use blocks anymore. So I have learned that I just need to figure out the best way to start without blocks and without going backwards. And so I showed her, I said, well, what masters athletes can start with one hand on the ground, which regular athletes can't. You either have to have both or none. So we can do a 3-point start, which I didn't know until 9 months ago. So so I told her that, and she's like, oh, that's really good. And that you've saved me a whole lot. And she like plunked the thing. And so that's how we ended up in the race.
Oh, cool.
And all that. So she was like, yeah. So it's just little things like that. It's just more of the education. I have to use blocks, or the sound of a gun is going to scare the living daylight out of me. You experienced that one.
Yes.
You know, things, little things like that. So if we can get rid of those barrier, like myths, as I would call them, don't need to run, you don't need to wear spikes. You can run in your bare feet if you so choose. So wear your sneakers, just show up, do whatever you can, have a marker. And the next time you come out, try and be better than that. It's running against yourself and your time. If people get that, then like any human being, once there's a few little bits, your competitive juices at the end of the day, we're born to conquer, right? Yeah. So it's like,
it's a why not philosophy is what I'm hearing. Like,
I know.
Yeah. So what's coming up this year for you, Omena? Like, what's next on your radar?
So I officially became a senior citizen last year.
Congratulations.
Wow. So okay. I can get my discounts at wherever. Anyway, I did go to IHOP and just for the fun of it, because I was like less than a week after just so that I could
get
use
your
that.
Discount pancakes. Yeah.
Yeah. So I got that. The lady kind of looked at me and she was like, you can order off that. You know, I don't look my age anyway. So she, when I was ordering,
probably
she's like,
don't
oh,
you're your age either. With all the exercise you do, you could.
So she's like, you can. That's for the whatever. I'm like, yeah, I am. I'm like, do you want to see my ID? She's like, no, sis. If you
do, you want to see my.
Good.
It's like the opposite of getting carded, right? Like, I swear, I'm 55.
So it was kind of like funny, but I've used it. Then I still don't remember that, but so it's more of I'm kind of like. I just got into a new age category too. So Montreal was my first national competition in that age group. So I'm trying to be
exciting.
A little bit better, heal, learn some things that I can help people with. So I spend a lot of time reading about health stuff and movement. My physiotherapist will be happy. So yeah, just all those kind of things, trying to educate people more on those things. So that's my life stuff.
Do you think you'll still be racing the same distances, or do you have any different?
No, I can't. I can't do anything. I can't go more than 200. I don't have the time to train for a 4.
Okay.
And that is a painful race. I heard once that it's called a finish line for a reason. So I do not cross the line more than once. Once I cross it, it's finished. So, So all those, anything that
that's
requires.
That's how I feel about the marathon. It was a once and I'm done.
Yeah. So the finish line, technically for anything that I do, a true finish line is 200 meters, which is the longest indoors. You can run indoors.
Yeah,
and so anything outside that is crossing the line too many times. So so that's
I love it.
I don't think I'm going to. Yeah.
And that's what I love about this podcast, right? Because you get people that are like 200 is my sweet spot and 400 is kind of pushing it.
Too long.
I couldn't do anything past 400. Yeah. And then other people that are like, oh, I don't get warmed up till I've gone 50K or whatever. And it's like, and it's all okay. Like it's all people have, they gravitate to something. I don't think there's like a wrong way to move your body.
No, there's no wrong way. No.
Even
the 60 meters. So it takes me in total to prepare for a 60 meter race on race day. If I add the 30 minutes warm up I do at home before I get to the track. So there's 30 minutes there and then there's 45 minutes at the track. So it takes me over an hour to prepare to run 10 seconds. 60.
Yes. Yes.
Oh my gosh. So I still can get warmed up quickly. And the older I get, the longer it takes me.
Not
to warm up, but to recover from the warm up.
Right.
So I have to show up at track an hour, at least an hour before my event. And meanwhile, I've done 30 minutes workout at home in the afternoon. So I've recovered from that warm up. Then I come to the track and do 35 to 40 minutes. Then I recover from that before my event.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
So.
Okay. There's our sound bite. I have to recover from my warm up before my event. I love it. But it's a formula that works for you and you excel at it. Yeah. And that's just amazing.
So I know I don't want to be tired. So that's what I have to do which is why my daughter doesn't come to track with me unless she's trying to save gas. Because she's like, you go there too early. And I'm like, I have to do all my stuff first and before I can do anything.
You're like, I'm not in my 20s anymore.
No.
Oh my gosh. I love, it's so refreshing to talk to you. I love your perspective on everything. Is there anything we missed? Is there anything you want to leave our listeners with to inspire them to give track consideration for themselves?
I will say try it. The good thing about track is that first of all, you don't need any equipment. Unless you want to do a throw. I mean, there's track and field, so let's not forget about a field. But you don't have to carry anything. You just need to show up. You just need your sneakers on your feet and you're good to go. So that's one thing. Mm-hmm. A lot of the movement or training for track is functional, as my physiotherapist will agree with me. So nothing else, just do it for the rest of the whole thing, the joy of movement, the whatever it is. You can set goals for yourself so that you just want to be better than you were yesterday when you show up. You will feel good. You'll feel better. The older you get is even more important because then you recover from most things faster than the average Joe. Like I've had some major surgeries and stuff and the doctors have been amazed and it's like, oh, your muscle tone. I'm like, it's because I work out. So So look at it as medicine for a whole lot of illnesses and stuff like that. It's not, it doesn't take too long for you to do it. It's not like a 5-hour run for your marathon people and you don't have to devote a whole day. You know, I could go for my run, come back, sleep, binge watch some Netflix thing and
sounding very attractive.
Will still be running.
As I was on my third podcast this weekend during my run that was 2 hours long. Yeah, that sounds very attractive.
It's a shorter thing. And then for the people who do distance running, I would say this could be a good thing. I mean, track goes all the way to 5,000. To 5,000 meters. So you can do a whole lot of other things as your speed. You could use indoor season in Manitoba in winter for your speed training, workout, and all that stuff. So it's going to help you to do other things. And there's always field. If you don't want to run, you can always throw something. Yeah.
Yes.
Which exactly. can come in handy in every part of your life if you know how to throw stuff.
Right. There's something for everyone.
Yeah. There's something for everybody.
Yeah. Well, you've been a very passionate ambassador for track and field. So we thank you for that. And it's been a joy to talk to you. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you very much.